Thank you. Thank you. His divine grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, ISKCON BBT founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Naam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem Zikahu Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shama Kundara Kuni Giri Govardhan ki jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Sri Maya Purnavadip Dham ki jai, Tulasi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Jamuna Mai Kari ki jai, Ganga Mai ki jai, Shama Veda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All glorious citizens of the devotees, all glorious citizens of the devotees, all glorious citizens of the devotees, all glorious to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. To you all. Nice to see you. Many familiar faces, but also some new faces in the crowd. And this is my first visit to the mandir here, although I've seen pictures of it. but this is my first physical visit. So I'm happy to be here for the first time. But not the last, hopefully. I've chosen a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is from the 10th canto, 14th chapter, and verse number 8. And the title of the chapter is Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. So the verse is written here on the board. Can you please repeat? Tat
Te
Yukampam Su Sumikshamano Bhunjana Evatma Kritam Vipakam Rig Bapuvir Idadam Namaste Jivita Yo Mukti Pare Sa Bayaba Tate Nukam Pam Su Samikshamano Punjanaya Vatma Pitam Vipakam
Punjanaya Vatma Pitam Vipakam
Vagvipavir Vidadam Namaste
Vagvipavir Vidadam Namaste
Jivatayo Mukti Parisavayahu Tenu kampam su samikshamano
Tenu kampam su samikshamano
Bhunjanai vatma pitam vipakam
Bhunjanai vatma pitam vipakam
Vivagvapuvir viradam namaste
Vivagvapuvir viradam namaste
Jivatayo mukti parisabhaya va Kampam susamikshamano
Kampam susamikshamano
Bhunjanai vatma pitam vipakam
Bhunjanai vatma pitam vipakam
Varma purvi vadadan namaste
Varma purvi vadadan namaste
Jiveteyo mukti padesabhadaya bhad Please chant.
Hinukampam sumikshamano.
Hinukampam sumikshamano.
Bhunjanai vatma pitam vipakam.
Bhunjanai vatma pitam vipakam.
Vipavir viradam namaste.
Can't see it. We'll take some donations for a pair of glasses for you. Anyone else can see it?
Yeah.
Tat.
Tat.
Therefore.
Therefore.
Te.
Te.
Your.
Your.
Anukampam.
Anukampam.
Compassion.
Compassion.
Susam nikshamanaha.
Susam nikshamanaha.
Earnestly hoping for. Bhunjanaha. Enduring.
Eva.
Certainly.
Atmakritam.
Done by himself. Vipakam. The fruit of results.
Read.
With his heart. Bak.
Words.
Bapurbi. And body. Vidadan.
Offering.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Obeisances. Te.
Unto you.
Jivita.
Lives.
Ya.
Anyone who.
Muktipare. To the position of liberation.
Sa.
He. Vayabak.
The rightful heir.
Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Please repeat. Please repeat. Is it there? Ah, it's the right, it's not the right, okay. Then I'll go on with the purport. Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word su samikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord, and therefore the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced that activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, He may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues
offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the word Dayabach. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the supreme pure, Lord Krishna, without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. Om Ajnanta Mirandasya Ganandanam Salakaya Chakshurum Miritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namah Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadarmayam Dadati Svabhadartikam Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pastadeve Shatarane Panchakalpa Tirubhyascha Kripa Sindhubheva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasade Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So this is an important verse that's spoken by Lord Brahma, and I've chosen this verse because I have recently been listening to a series of lectures given by Srila Prabhupada both on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and somehow or another he keeps repeating this verse again and again in both the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam lectures. So it just kind of moved me to want to speak on this particular verse. There are two basic commentators on Srimad Bhagavatam. Here in this verse, they've referred to Sridhar Swami. And we know that when Srila Prabhupada did his translations for his books, he would refer to a very large Sanskrit book that contained the commentaries of, I think, either 7 or 9 different prominent Vaishnava acharyas in our line. And two of those acharyas were Srila Sridhar Swami, and the other is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So, in another commentary on the 10th canto, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Lord Brahma is speaking this verse after he has rejected all the other types of spiritual processes, and he is accepting bhakti as a means to attain Krishna. So even Lord Brahma, as we know, has the topmost post in the material world. Even he had to go through a process of purification and to come to the stage where he actually accepted Krishna as the Supreme Person. We know from the Bhagavatam that at one point he really didn't know what to do. He was very intelligent. We know that Lord Brahma, at least the Lord Brahma in our particular universe, he has 4 heads. And we know that in other universes, according to the Krishna book, Brahma may have 10 heads, 100 heads, 1,000 heads, 10,000 heads. So, you can imagine, he has a lot on his mind. So our four-headed Brahma, even he, with all his knowledge, at one point was a little bit bewildered. And as he was sitting atop the lotus flower that sprouted from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and he was swaying back and forth,
in the darkness because his lotus stem was very large, and all, he was by himself in this atop this big lotus flower, and he started to ponder that what is my real purpose in life? What is it that I should do? And in curiosity, he climbed down the stem of a lotus flower, but he could find no end to it because it was very long. So he quickly crawled back up, and he sat back on the lotus flower, and within himself, he called out. He didn't know who he was calling out to, but he called out, and he wanted to know the meaning of life. He wanted to know how to connect to that supreme being. And then we know that Krishna, through some transcendental means, imparted spiritual knowledge within the heart of Lord Brahma and enlightened him. And so therefore, from that point forward, he was enlightened. He knew his purpose, and he knew what he was supposed to do within this world. So, here, at this point of the Bhagavatam, he has accepted bhakti as the process. And he's accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the commentary given by Srila Sridhar Swami, he makes a point. He gives a description of a legitimate son. That's mentioned also in the translation, that the legitimate son of the father is the rightful heir to receive the wealth of the father. But we may ask the question, who is actually a legitimate son? If we go to the dictionary and get a definition of legitimate, we find that it says, one who conforms to rules or laws. So a legitimate son is one who conforms to the instructions of the father. Otherwise, he cannot be said to be legitimate. So therefore, devotees, if they want to be legitimate sons and daughters of Krishna, they have to be very alive. That's also mentioned in the verse and purport. That a devotee has to be very alive in Krishna consciousness. Alive. It means that one can't be half-baked. Half-baked does not cut it in Krishna consciousness. You can't be half. It doesn't work. And Prabhupada sometimes mentions this half-hen logic. This is a certain class of philosophers that they only accept part of the knowledge, like the Mayavadis, and they throw away the rest. They use guru, they use shastra, they use the deity to climb up to a certain position, and then they declare themselves to be the supreme. And they then, like a ladder, kick away the deities, the guru, the shastra, because after all, if they're the supreme lord, they have no need for these things. So this is a philosophy of like half a hen. Because you know that a hen is quite valuable, because from the backside comes eggs. Of course, if we're very fortunate, we can find the hen, I guess it was a goose, who laid the golden egg. But anyway, the hen produces eggs from the back. But from the front, you have to feed the hen. Otherwise, no eggs. So someone may think, well, I only want the eggs. I don't want to bother feeding the hen. So they may think, let me cut this hen in half, and I'll just keep the backside, and I'll get the eggs, and I won't have to feed this hen any longer. This is the logic of half the hen. So we shouldn't be half-baked in Krishna consciousness, accepting just the parts that we like. For instance, prasadam. We may say, I really like prasadam time. But I don't really care so much when the Swami comes and gives the lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam, because it makes me very sleepy. It's a good cure for insomnia, but I'm getting sleepy, I'm getting hungry, I'm getting thirsty. How long is this person going to go on speaking? We may be thinking like that. But we should relish all the different aspects of Krishna consciousness equally. From following the four regulative principles, to studying Prabhupada's books, to chanting the holy name, serving the devotees, all different angas that Srila Rupa Goswami has mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. There are many different angas or limbs of bhakti. So we should be equally interested in practicing them all. Don't think that you can have half the hen. You have to have the whole. So there's a problem with being just half-baked. And there's a story that Prabhupada told that illustrates this point. Now, he once explained that there was a person who did not know how to speak English. I think it was a person from Bengal. He didn't know how to speak English, but he had to go overseas to an English-speaking country, and he had to communicate enough to the people there to be understood. So the persons that were sending him overseas, they were giving him some advice. They told him that no problem. All you have to do is learn three words. Yes, no, and very good. Only three words you have to know. So the person went overseas, and he got a good job. He was working very nicely. But one day, at the place where he was working, something of great value was stolen. And the big boss was asking each person, have you stolen this? Have you stolen it? Have you stolen it? And finally it came to this person's time, and the person was asked, did you steal this valuable thing? And of course, the person said, yes. And he said, well, are you prepared to give it back? And then he said, no. And then he said, well, we're going to have to punish you. And you know, you may have to go to jail for this. Do you understand this? Is that all right? And he said, very good. So we don't want to be no, yes, and very good only. We should not think that we can just accept half of the process and not the rest. Otherwise, we may end up like that person in Durga's prison house of the material world for many, many lifetimes. We should have our aim to get out of this material world in this lifetime and not stick around here till the end of Kali Yuga. Because if you read the 12th canto, wow, there's a pretty vivid description of what happens as Kali Yuga, you know, develops. It gets pretty hellish at the end. If you think it's hellish now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because at the end of Kali Yuga, it becomes pure hell. So we have to train ourselves to become 100% Krishna conscious as soon as possible. We have to start now. There's always a tendency, you know, in the human form of life to be a procrastinator, to put things off. Too many of us have this bad habit of putting off what we can do today until tomorrow. Isn't it? We have that attitude. And we're gradually aging. I remember when I was 20. I remember when I was 30. I remember when I was 40. I remember when I was 50. And now I'm going on 56. And soon will come 60, and then will come 70, and then will come maybe 80. But how long beyond that, only the Lord knows. So we shouldn't wait until all our teeth have fallen out, and we can no longer hear, and we can no longer see, and we can no longer walk, and we can no longer perform hardly any bodily function, until we think, now is the time for me to become serious about becoming Krishna conscious. There's a saying that I think you all know better than me. Nigas Kugan. You know that?
Yes.
What does that mean? Huh? What does it mean? What's a literal translation? Huh? Yeah, it's like like a fire that's blazing very hot in the beginning and then gradually goes out. Or like the shooting star. When it appears on one side of the horizon, it looks like something really special. But then it goes across the horizon and gradually it reduces in its intensity of light, and then it gradually just disappears. So we don't want our practice of Krishna consciousness to be like that, where we start out with all enthusiasm. We often see this. Young devotees, they come to Krishna consciousness, they have a lot of initial enthusiasm, and they're like really into everything, into the kirtan, into the japa, into the prasadam, and into so many things. Really enthusiastic to do service. But then after some time, that enthusiasm begins to wane, and it gradually decreases, until nothing. We don't want to be like that. This verse says that for one who can maintain his enthusiasm, and for one who is very strict in his practices, there's a great reward to be had. What is that reward? Srila Sridhara Swami says that one automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of Krishna. That such a person will go back to Godhead. So in this verse, we'll see the word su samikshamanu. And this means one who is earnestly hoping for, or one who is earnestly awaiting the mercy of the Lord. Even while suffering painful effects of previous sinful activities. Now, we can contrast this with the Bhagavad Gita. Now, that was mentioned in the purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said that when a devotee fully surrenders to Krishna, that he is freed of all his past karma. So how do we compare or understand these two statements? They seem contradictory. On one hand, it says that one automatically becomes eligible to go back to Godhead, but then it says that one has to suffer the painful effects of previous sinful activities. But Bhagavad Gita says, if you are surrendered, you are freed of all your past karma. So what exactly is happening here? As explained in the purport, Krishna, he makes a very special arrangement for his devotees. Some may call this partiality, but actually it's not partiality. Yayatamam prapadyante is said. That depending on how we surrender to Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate with us in that way. Like Prabhupada said, if you take one step towards Krishna, Krishna will take 100 steps towards you. So he's more than reciprocal. He will give you much more in return than what you give him. So we should be very forthcoming about giving to Krishna. So he's not partial, but he's simply reciprocating to his devotees. And he deals with the devotees differently than he deals with non-devotees. There's an example. Just like a cat will use his sharp or her sharp teeth to carry her kittens, we sometimes see, by the scruff of the neck. She will carry her kittens from one place to another. And the kittens are actually enjoying this. They feel the jaws of their mother to be very blissful or very a very secure position, that my mother is carrying me, so now I'm secure, I'm protected. But the cat will use those same jaws to catch hold of a rat. And for the rat, those same jaws are literally the jaws of death. The rat knows that it's only seconds before the cat will close down and kill it. Same jaws, same cat, deals with her kittens in a very loving and caring way, deals with the rat like death personified. So Krishna deals with his devotees in a very special way, very unique. Each devotee has a special relationship with Krishna, and each devotee, Krishna will reciprocate with his devotees in a very special way. So he's always there, and he makes special arrangements for his devotees to advance in Krishna consciousness. It's a fact. He's always offering his mercy to us. Sometimes we realize that, we get some little... there's something that happens in our lives and we get some realization that Krishna is giving me some special mercy. But the real fact is that at every moment Krishna is offering his mercy to us, but we're not so expert to catch that mercy. The mercy is always flowing, it's always coming. But we have to learn how to become eligible to receive, accept that mercy. So until we become pure devotees, we will always have some measure, either grossly or subtly, some measure of attachment to sinful activity, or attachment to the material world. And if we are introspective, and if we honestly look within, we will find that we are honeycombed with many attachments still. Even though we may have been practicing Krishna consciousness for many years, we still have many attachments within. And if we're really looking hard, we will find that those attachments are there, and that we gradually have to learn how to root them out. So therefore Krishna, he makes a very special arrangement for his devotees. And it may appear sometimes harsh. We may sometimes wonder, why am I suffering these bodily pains? Or why am I suffering other kinds of difficulties in this material world? After all, I'm Krishna's devotee. So why is Krishna giving me all of this difficulty and all of this pain? But, as mentioned in this verse in purport, this is meant to remove the desires which are still within. Those things we're still holding on to, either grossly or subtly. Krishna is mercifully trying to pry those things out of our minds and our hearts. He has to do that because we're not so willing to let them go. So he, by force, has to remove them. So it may seem like pain, But we should understand that it's actually His mercy, that He's helping us to remove these things. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's mentioned some points also in this purport. And he explains that the Krishna's can sometimes be compared to like a father. And sometimes the father will give the child some nice milk to drink. Or sometimes he may give the child some bitter neem juice to drink. Of course, there's reasons for that. Neem juice is a medicinal herb, so it helps to cure various diseases. But still, from the child's perspective, the milk is something more relishable, it's more tasty. The bitter neem juice is not very nice. But still, from the father's point of view, according to the needs of the child, he will give the milk or he will give the bitter neem juice. But or sometimes we'll see that the parent will embrace the child and smother him with love and affection and kisses and so many other things. And sometimes the parent will beat the child to teach him a lesson. Even Mother Yashoda sometimes would do that to Krishna. We know in the Damodar Leela that when Krishna was mischievous, that Mother Yashoda came with a stick. She was going to catch him and to beat him. Or she was going to then tie him to a wooden grinding mortar with a rope to punish him. So sometimes a parent will do this to benefit the child. But the devotee, the true devotee, accepts whatever Krishna gives to him as an arrangement of the Lord for his benefit. And the devotee thinks that the Lord certainly knows what is best for me, even if I don't. We should have that faith that Krishna knows what is best, and that Krishna is making all the right arrangements for us so that we can advance in Krishna consciousness. So out of His mercy, Krishna sometimes He gives us happiness, and sometimes He gives us distress. But He knows how to best engage us in His service. So technically, unhappiness that a devotee may suffer is not a karmic reaction like the non-devotee's experience. Rather, it's Krishna's special mercy on His devotees to completely assist them to free themselves from the material world and return home back to Godhead. So, going back to Godhead should clearly be our goal. We have read it plenty of times in Srila Prabhupada's books. Even the beginner in Krishna consciousness knows that the goal is to go back to Godhead. He or she knows that the material world is not our home. It's a temporary arrangement. It's meant for our rehabilitation, to prepare ourselves, to purify ourselves, so that we can go back home, back to Godhead. Somebody's cell phone, undoubtedly. But we have that rule, all cell phones off. Anyway, if it's not there, it should be there. There's a really beautiful picture of Gop Kumar. And this is a beautiful painting by V.G. Sharma, a very famous Indian Vedic artist. And he's painted this beautiful picture of Gop Kumar. And Gop Kumar was in his spiritual form, he was a cowherd boy. And in his sadhak form, in this world, he was a seeker. And he wanted to know the truth. He wanted to know the highest thing. He wanted to know the process for attaining the highest thing. And Sanatana Goswami, in a very long work called the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he chronicles all the different steps Gop Kumar took to prepare himself to go back to Godhead. So in this long narration by Sanatana Goswami, Gopakumari goes through many different stages and he approaches different demigods, different great devotees, step by step, and he investigates different processes and so many things. And then finally he comes to the stage of pure spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And then he's fully purified and he attains his spiritual form as a cowherd boy. And then he enters the spiritual world. And this is the painting that Vichy Sharma has drawn. And this beautiful picture where Gopakumar has just arrived in Goloka Vrindavan. And Krishna has seen him. And Krishna is with his other friends and they're walking and they're engaged in some transcendental activities, maybe herding the cow or the calves or doing something. But when he sees Gopakumar, he puts everything aside and immediately runs to Gopakumar and he embraces Gopakumar with both arms and he draws him very tightly to his chest and like this, he puts his head to Gopakumar's head and he welcomes him back to the spiritual world. So it's a very touching and it's a very beautiful depiction of Krishna's love for his devotees. So Krishna is there. He's waiting for each and every one of us to return back home, back to God. That is what we have to look forward to in the future if we become pure devotees of Krishna. That is what we have to look forward to. We should be looking forward to that. So, again, the sincere devotee, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and he continues to offer respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. That's mentioned in the verse. And there are two examples of this which come to mind. One is in Krishna Leela and one is in Chaitanya Leela. The example in Krishna Leela is that of Sudama Vipra. Sudama Vipra was a friend of Krishna. And when Krishna was in the school of Sandipani Muni, this is mentioned in Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, that he went to the Gurukul, and he was in the Gurukul, and then it said in 64 days and 64 nights, he learned all of the Vedic arts. And he became very expert, very proficient in all of them. Very expert. So, he was very close. And one time, they were given this task, this service to perform. And that was to gather firewood in the forest. So even though it was a very difficult task, Sudama Vipra and Krishna, they went out into the forest and they were gathering the firewood, but at that time there was a very great storm that came up. So both Krishna and Sudama Vipra, they were caught in this storm and they couldn't come back from the forest and they had to spend the whole night out in the forest. So they were so determined that even though they had to undergo this great austerity, they came back in the morning with the firewood. And Sandipani Muni was so pleased that he blessed them both. You know, gave them all his blessings. So later on, when Krishna was in Dwarka, and he had all his 16,000, 108 palaces, and all his queens, and all the opulence of his great, you know, palaces. At the same time, Sudama Vipra was in the position of a very poor Brahmana. And he hardly had any clothes. His clothes had holes in them. He only had one dhoti, holes in it. The house that he and his wife were living in had holes in it, so rain was coming in. They hardly had food to eat. Even a few grains of rice was a feast to them. So their poverty level was very low. So the wife, she thought, well, you have this childhood friend, Krishna. And we know that Krishna is very wealthy. Now he has some 16,108 palaces in Dwarka. Each of those palaces is made of marble and onyx and is, you know, embedded with all valuable gems in the walls. Furniture made of coral and silk and, anyway, ivory. And there's so many opulences there. So much wealth, unlimited wealth in all these 16,108 palaces. So she said, why don't you go and ask Krishna just for a little bit of that wealth? Just a little. Just a little bit. He has so much. He'll surely give it to you. But Sudama Vipra was not in that mood. He didn't want to ask Krishna for anything. Because the real devotee doesn't want to ask Krishna. Doesn't want to ask Krishna for anything other than, you know, how can I render you service? He didn't want to do it, but still, he was a little pushed by the wife. He was a, kind of a pushy wife. You know how wives can be sometimes. Sometimes they push the husbands. The husbands don't exactly want to do it, but the wife says, no, 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 you do it anyway. So the wife was a little pushy. And she told Sudama, you go. This aspirin, he said, okay. But I have to take Krishna something. I have to take him some offering. Otherwise, how can I meet him? So what did they have? As I said, they were poverty-stricken. So the only thing they had was some dry rice. Some old rice that was dried in the sun or something. Just some few grains. So he said, okay, give me that. So she wrapped that up in a little cloth, and he took it. He wrapped it up in his cloth and went to see Krishna. And he kind of forgot about it, because when he came to Krishna's door, to imagine these huge doors in this huge palace in Dwarka, they opened, and the servant said, yes, may I help you? This is Lord Krishna's residence. What can I do? He said, well, I'd like to meet Krishna. She said, well, what is your name? My name is Sudama Vipra. I'm an old friend of Krishna's. Please tell him. So the servant went and told Krishna, Sudama Vipra is calling. What did Krishna do? At that time, he was with Rukmini on his bedstead, and he was enjoying some conversation with her. And so then he immediately left her, and he went to receive his friend at the door. He embraced Sudama Vipra. He brought him in. He personally washed the feet of Sudama Vipra, and he took that water and he put it on his head. And then he took Sudama Vipra and put him on his personal bed, and he massaged his feet and his legs with scented oils. And then he arranged for Sudama Vipra to take a bath, and then he gave him very nice silk garments to wear, and he made all the arrangements for Sudama Vipra like this. So then, after they had honored Prasad, they were sitting together on Krishna's big silk bed. And Krishna asked Sudama, what is the news? And Sudama said, well, you know, I am kind of in a difficult situation. But by the grace of the Lord, everything is going on nicely. He still didn't want to ask for anything from Krishna. But then Krishna saw in his cloth that there was some kind of a bulge. That's where that chipped rice was kept. So Krishna saw and he snatched it. And he opened it up and he said, what is this, Sudama Vipra? And he said, well, and Sudama Vipra was very ashamed. He felt, gosh, here I am in this huge palace and all I have is some few grains of chipped rice to offer to Krishna. How can I do it? And Krishna said, Sudama Vipra, you're holding out on me. You brought me a feast, but you're keeping it for yourself. So he snatched that rice and he immediately ate it. And when he ate that rice, Krishna was fully satisfied. And not only was Krishna satisfied, But everyone in the whole universe was satisfied. And that's only after he took one morsel. He was about to take a second morsel, but then Lakshmi Devi came and said, "No, no, don't take a second morsel. I have already supplied everybody. If you take that second morsel, I will not have enough wealth to distribute to everyone." So Krishna restrained himself. And then Sudama Vipra, he still didn't ask for anything. And by, he left, he went home. And he thought, I cannot ask Krishna. So then, when he was approaching his home, what did he see? He was coming up the same old path. But then he saw in the distance this huge palatial home. Beautiful. Very ornately decorated. Huge. Then he saw his wife come out with very costly silk garments. Beautifully ornamented with gold, bangles, and diamonds, and rubies, and emeralds, and sapphires. So many things. And she was so beautifully dressed, radiant. She had so many servants following her. And he said, "What has happened?" She said, "I don't know. This all of a sudden, everything transformed into this amazing, opulent situation." So then Sudama realized that even without asking Krishna, that Krishna gave everything without his asking. Gave everything. So much. And he felt that Krishna is so wonderful that he can do this. So Krishna can do this, and he will do this with each and every one of us in a certain way. We shouldn't expect that when we go home today, after the class, that our wives or our husbands will come out of a big palatial house that we left this morning that wasn't too big and it wasn't too opulent and maybe not very clean with a few rats running around. But we should not expect that it will be transformed into this big palatial house and that our wives have been transformed into, you know, Miss Universe and comes out with opulence and gold and everything. Because Krishna deals with every devotee according to what the devotee needs. He'll give us what we need. He says what he says in Bhagavad Gita. He says that he preserves what we have and he will give us what we lack. So he'll do what we need to advance in Krishna consciousness. So he may give us pleasure, he may give us pain, he may give us happiness, he may give us distress. But he'll give us what we need to advance in Krishna consciousness. We should have that kind of faith. The second example is that of Kolavesha Sridhar in Chaitanya Lila. Kolavesha Sridhar, who he had a very simple business. If you want to talk about simplicity. His business was to make cups out of leaves. In India, they have this system of making plates and also cups out of certain types of leaves. And they stitch them together with straw, pieces of straw. Those of you who have gone to India or from Indian culture, you'll know that. That sometimes you may be served on these things. Like these plates or cups made from leaves. That was his business. That's what he was doing. He was making these things and selling them. You can imagine, he didn't really have very much income. He was also selling some bananas on the side. So he really wasn't very opulent, to say the least. His house was leaking. He had holes in the ceiling. When the rains came, it leaked in. And he had very, you know, simple attire. He was poor in all respects from material estimation. But he was very rich spiritually. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very kind upon him, and he would come and visit him, even buy some of his bananas, buy some of his leaf cups and plates. But he saw that Kola Venture was in a very poverty-stricken position. He saw that he was a great devotee, so he wanted to do something for him. And what did he want to do? He wanted to give him some opulence. He said, Kola Venture, you're so poor. Let me give you something. Let's at least repair your house and get you some decent clothing and the basic necessities. And what did Kola Venture Sridhar say to him? He said, no. He said, actually, my house is fine. He said, look at the birds. The birds, they only have a nest. They have no roof over their heads. They're living in a tree, but they're quite happy. They said, at least I have part of a roof. Even though there's some holes, at least it's better than the birds. And in this way, he was telling Mahaprabhu this. And Mahaprabhu said, well, is there anything else I can do for you? And he said, yes, there's one thing. He said, give me pure devotion to your lotus feet, that I will always be able to serve you in any circumstance. Give me pure bhakti, that's all I want. So we see these examples of these devotees, that even though they're in these difficult positions, still they're more interested in bhakti than they are in opulence. On the other side, you can contrast that with devotees who were in opulent positions. Maharaj Pratapuruja, the king of Orissa, he was the king. He had so many palaces and so many people at his disposal. What did he do? He swept the road in front of the Jagannath cart for the service of Lord Jagannath. Or we see the Goswamis, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. They both were in very highly placed government positions. They were earning huge amounts of money. They're very opulent. But they wanted to serve the Lord, and they voluntarily gave up everything. They gave up all their wealth, and they became Goswamis. They only had loincloths, and they forgot to eat, they forgot to sleep, because they were so immersed in love of Krishna that they only thought of one thing, service. So that's all they were doing. They were translating, they were doing this, they were doing that. Just services for Krishna. So the bona fide servant of Krishna, he considers all hardship a very small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord. Small price. Think about the fact that we may have been here, I don't think may, I think that we have been here for many births. Many hundreds, thousands, who knows how many births we've been in the material world, and somehow or another now we've come to the human form of life. That's an amazing thing. Out of the 8,400,000 species, we've probably gone through many of them. We probably had big ears, big teeth, big noses, big tails, long legs, long necks. You can imagine all the different creatures. Many legs. Who knows? Many eyes. That covers 8 million. And even amongst the 400,000, it's described that hardly a few of them are civilized. Hardly a few are civilized. And even amongst all those who are civilized, hardly a few of those are interested in spiritual life. So we're really in the minority here. The few persons who are interested in the worship of Krishna out of all the species, very tiny percentage. So we are in a very fortunate position. So we should consider ourselves to be very fortunate. We should never become complacent. We should never take for granted Krishna consciousness. We should always think that we have the greatest fortune. If there was ever a great treasure to be had in this material world, the greatest treasure is Krishna consciousness. It's worth more than everything else put together, and far, far beyond that. Because as it said, the reward, Daya Bhak, such a devotee becomes the rightful heir, it is said, to receive the mercy of Krishna. It's our right, it's our birthright. If we surrender and become pure devotees, it's our right. We become an heir to the wealth of Krishna consciousness. So this person, he or she, becomes the legitimate son or daughter of the Supreme Lord. And in closing, I will just read a last sentence here in the purport, which kind of sums it all up nicely. And it says, just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the Supreme Pure, Lord Krishna, without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering. It may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. So Krishna is very kind to his devotees, and he makes all arrangements for them to advance. We simply have to accept the process of Krishna consciousness the way that it has been given. And we have to become sincere practitioners, and we will become the recipients of Krishna's mercy. So I will stop there, and I'll ask if anyone has any questions at all. Any questions come out which pertain to the verse? Please ask now. Any questions? Yes. Yes. Sorry? What about them? Why don't you repeat the question in the mic? Is it on? Does it work? Of course not. We will give you a second one and hope that it works. It also doesn't work. Voila. Okay, next. It also doesn't work. Okay, just speak loudly. Did it work? No. You said that I was speaking about half-baked. Then you said, what about the non-devotees? And? What are they? What are they? What?
How about them?
How about them? Well, their position is very inauspicious, and it's very dark, obviously. I mean, if we have to go through so many difficulties to get the mercy of Krishna, and persons who are non-devotees, and their activities are in the modes of passion and ignorance, Krishna only knows what is their destination. We can read about that in the Bhagavatam. 12th canto, 5th canto speaks all about this. It's like there are so many types of hells for persons who are addicted to sinful activities. I mean, very precise. Like, for example, if someone is addicted to drinking alcohol, it is said that in the next birth, to prepare him for the next birth, when the Yamadutas come and jerk his subtle body out of his gross body, Then they take him to a place in which they pry open. There are drawings of this in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. They pry open his mouth from the top and the bottom, open his mouth wide, and then another Yamaduta pours in molten hot copper. Right? This is for the person who likes to drink alcohol. So now he's forced to drink a really hot beverage. What is that? What do they call that? What's that drink? The power drink? What's it called? Red Bull. Right? Boy, if you think Red Bull is powerful, you should have a sip of this hot, molten copper. Boy, that really gets you going, I'll tell you. But it kind of burns on the inside a bit. And it's really painful. Someone who's addicted to eating meat. It's like something, you know, that you can see in one frame, the person is cooking something in a wok, in a big wok, hot flames, stirring something. In the next frame, that's the person who is doing the frying, he finds himself in the wok, being fried, like that. One who's addicted to sex life, it is said, then he gets in a certain form, and then he's made to embrace the opposite sex, who has a form that is red hot, literally red hot, heated to red hot or white hot, and he's forced to embrace that form. And so he's burning, burning, burning like that. So there's so many examples of the karma that we can get. So material nature can give us anything. It's very precise. So non-devotees are in a very difficult position. That's why as devotees, we have to be compassionate. That's one of the 26 qualities of the devotee. He's compassionate. And with his or her compassion, he tries to help the non-devotees to come to Krishna consciousness. Go out and harinam, give them the holy name, give them prasadam, give them Prabhupada's books, get them to chant, some way engage them in Krishna consciousness to help them. Somehow, any way you can, do that. It's like when we walk in the morning. Because I heard Prabhupada was telling us in this one of his lectures, he was talking about that even the animals on our farms are not ordinary. He was talking about the dogs, the cows, and all the different animals. He said they're not ordinary. Because they get prasadam, they hear the holy name, they're, you know, the pets of devotees, or the cows of devotees, whatever. They're in a very special position. They're not ordinary. So even for animals, such as dogs, cats, and so on, we can help them by giving them prasadam. It's like when we walk in the morning, we see these little dogs, we give them a little bit of prasadam. Some of Raghunath's baked bread. They're probably the only dogs in Metro Manila that get organically baked bread. A little bit every morning they get. And they're looking forward to it. What is their future? Well, they will certainly get a better birth, or they may just go back to Godhead. We know that in Chaitanya Leela, there was a dog that used to come close to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that dog was given a piece of coconut meat, a little bit of the coconut pulp. And when Lord Chaitanya threw that pulp to that dog, and that dog took it, the dog immediately took a spiritual form, and he was immediately seen going back to Vaikuntha Loka. So never underestimate the power of prasad and the holy name, and so on. So we should be compassionate, we should help the non-devotees. Anything else? Yes. I hope this is not the same question you asked me 5 years ago.
Okay, you're saying, let me rephrase the question. Are you saying those persons who participate in Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement, where what's their spiritual designation? Destination, designation, what's their spiritual form? Chaitanya Charitamrita says that generally, as a general rule, they're in the mood of Manjari Bhav, which means they're like the maid servants of Srimati Radharani. So they're in that mood, Manjari Gopi category, because that was Lord Chaitanya's mood. He came in a golden form. He was like in the position of Srimati Radharani in separation from Krishna. So that's what he came to give. That move, that bhava, or that relationship. So generally, the followers of Lord Chaitanya are said to be in that mood. But it's not like an absolute rule, because we also see in Chaitanya Charitamrita that there were certain devotees who were like Ram Bhaktas, and Lord Chaitanya encouraged them, because that was their rasa. So we cannot say 100% that each of us has our sarup as a manjari or a gopi or whatever. We can say in general that the followers of Lord Chaitanya's movement are in that mood, but not everybody. But the real fact is, it's like a glass of water. When a glass of water is full, it's full. So if we're full in Krishna consciousness, and if we have attained our sarup, whatever that sarup is, you know, if it's as a cowherd boy, if it's as the parents, or as a lover, whatever it may be, it's completely satisfying to us. Do we ever hear, I've never read, and I've never heard, where the cowherd boys are lamenting. Have you ever heard? Oh, why am I a cowherd boy? Gosh, I'd like to be Mother Yashoda, or Nanda Maharaj. Now, why can't I be Srimati Radharani? Why am I a cowherd boy? We don't hear anybody lamenting like that. Because whenever they get that position, whoever they are, they're satisfied. Because that's the nature of our sarup. Because we have that relationship, whatever it is, we're satisfied with it. So I like that. Anything else? Roshaki. Yeah, okay, the question is, you know, we're said that see everything as Krishna's arrangement, or see Krishna's hand behind everything. That's kind of what this verse spoke about. So it's a fact that for the devotee, Krishna's hand is there, much differently than it is for the non-devotee. But it's also proportionate to the surrender that the devotee has to Krishna's will. So someone who is a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, for example, who's completely surrendered to Krishna's will, his every word, thought, and action is completely guided by Krishna. It's like when he was dictating his books. So once he was interviewed, and the interviewer asked him, how do you come up with these purports that you write in these translations? And Prabhupada said that Krishna dictates them to me directly. And then a devotee who thought he was very intelligent, he said, well, what Prabhupada means is that he refers to many commentaries
and he draws out the essence, and he puts it together in a way that's very complete for, you know, the audience that he wants to aim towards. And Prabhupada said, no. Krishna directly dictates to me whatever I speak into my dictaphone for these purports. Krishna is directly dictating to me. So for the pure devotee, Krishna is doing that. And for those of us who are less than pure devotees, Krishna will enter into our lives and direct us according to our level of surrender to Him. So if we're, say, in terms of percentages, 50% serenity, and Krishna will enter into our lives that amount. And if we're more, then He'll enter more. So it's proportional. Yayatam amprapadyante. As we surrender to Him, He awards us accordingly. So like this. But as devotees, we should always think that ultimately Krishna is behind everything. And we should never blame Krishna. A devotee never blames Krishna. Where that comes from, I can't imagine. That's part of the demoniac mentality, to blame Krishna. Why did Krishna do this? Why did Krishna do that? He took away this. He made me sick. He gave me that. He didn't do that. I prayed for this. He didn't give it to me. Krishna is not an order supplier. It's not that you can, you know, go to Him with a shopping list full of your desires and expect that He's going to, you know, start fulfilling them one after another. Oh, yes, very good. You want money? Oh, yes, I'll give you money. You want this? Yes, I will give you. That's not Krishna. That may be some of the demigods, but it's not Krishna. So, whatever we get, if we have poverty, if we have wealth, if we have good health, if we have bad health, whatever it is, we should think that this is somehow meant for our spiritual benefit, for our spiritual advancement, to root out the last vestiges of material attachment in this world. And whether we get pleasure or whether we get pain, we should think it's meant for our advancement. That's what this verse tells us. Okay? Is someone here? Yes. I mentioned about complacency. Talking about complacency in Krishna consciousness. So yes, you know, very often we can become complacent. So the question is, how do we safeguard against becoming complacent? Or if we're already complacent, how do we get out of that vicious circle? What I think is the most effective thing is that, well, there are a few things. One thing is key is good association. To associate with those who are not complacent in Krishna consciousness, for those who are progressive, who are very attentive to their sadhana, to their service, and are more advanced than us. That association can elevate us above complacency. Complacency is really something which is a product of the mode of ignorance. You know? Mode of ignorance. The modes. It's lethargy. It's sleepiness. It's tiredness. It's like, you know, lack of energy to want to do anything for Krishna. We get caught in this vicious trap. So the most important thing is good association. But the other thing is to be very prayerful and to beg for mercy. Like I've gotten into this routine now. The first thing I do when I awaken is that I offer prayers to Prabhupada, to his predecessors, to the six Goswamis, to Gornitai in Hong Kong, to Shishi Nitai Sunar Gornataraj, Shishi Dhyanatai Gaurahi, and to my Giriraj Govardhan, to Panchatattva, to Shishi Radhe Shyam Sundar, and to Sri Nam Prabhu himself, whose Krishna form the holy name. So I offer them prayers. And what do I pray for? The first thing I do is I express my gratitude for everything that they've given me. Because they have given so much. Whether we realize it or not, they've already given us so much. I thank them. I'm full of gratitude for what they have given to me. And then I ask them, please continue to be merciful to me. Then I ask, rather I beg, for the mercy and blessings to, or to be forgiven for all the offenses I have committed to them. And for the strength to never commit another offense in this lifetime. Then I pray for the mercy and blessings to increase my sadhana and my service, both qualitatively and quantitatively, with exclusive focus on chanting the holy name as my main service and all other services as secondary. So chanting the holy name is a primary thing. Then I pray. It's a long prayer. It takes a long time. Then I pray for the mercy and blessings to chant the holy name attentively, without offense, and with genuine love in my heart, so that I can cry out for the mercy of the Vaishnavas, Guru, and Krishna while I'm chanting the holy name. And then I beg for the mercy and blessings to have them take away my false ego and take all away the sense of false independence, that I'm somehow independent from Krishna. That's part of our problem, that we think we're independent of Krishna. That's why we're here in the material world, because we think we're independent. But actually, we're parts and parcels, and we're totally dependent on Krishna. So I pray, take that away. Take away that false ego. Take away that false independence. And, you know, make me your servant. Make me yours. Make your will one with my will. So that my consciousness is simply fixed on exclusively serving you only. So those are some prayers that I offer. And I found them to be very powerful and very focusing. And I experienced that Krishna actually and all those devotees and deities, that they reciprocate. So I think to the extent that we can offer prayers in that mood with great sincerity and love, and to that extent they will reciprocate with us. So if we're in the mood of complacency, good association, being prayerful, and just pushing ourselves, can pull us out of that mood of complacency. Pull us out. So that's the problem that all devotees face at one time in their devotional lives. Any last question? This one, if anyone has, I'll take one last question because it's getting late. Any last question? Yes.
Maharaj, you have mentioned that we have to realize every aspect in Krishna consciousness. But we also understand that if someone is not in good health, or if someone is sick, just like if he has severe headache, no matter how he tries to gratify senses, he could not enjoy it. So my question is, how can we also, materially we're also sick, so how can we relish every aspect in Krishna consciousness if we are so sick? Materially?
Yes, I understand. It's a very good question. And it's very appropriate that you've asked it to me.
because I have been somewhat ill for the last 5 years. So I have personal experience of this. Yes, I agree, it is not easy. It is very difficult when you are experiencing severe illness to be able to attentively chant your rounds or to, you know, other aspects of your sadhana or your service. I understand that it is very difficult. But we can also see it as an opportunity. If we can develop the right consciousness, and that consciousness is one of transcendence, ultimately. Because ultimately we're something different than this body. So even though this body and mind may be giving so much trouble to us, and we may be suffering so many aches and pains, and as you said, severe headache, whatever it may be, there's also a space for us to transcend that to whatever extent that we can, and we can rise above it. But that also requires prayer. And I didn't mention this, but I also pray that if it's Krishna's desire, if it's Krishna's will, then please give me the necessary health, strength, and energy to be able to perform my sadhana and my service nicely. But I leave that to Krishna. I said, if it's your desire. Because that's what Prabhupada told us. When he was ill, and when he was getting to leave this world, he told the devotees to pray like that. He said, you pray to Krishna, that Lord Krishna, if it's your desire, please cure Srila Prabhupada of his illness. So we can pray to Krishna in that mood. That if it's your desire, give me the necessary health, strength, and energy to be able to perform my sadhana and my service nicely. But ultimately, it's up to Krishna. So, we don't know. Maybe he will give it. Maybe he won't. He may have his reasons for giving it or for taking it away. It may be meant for our purification, the certain sufferings of the bodily condition, the mental condition. It may all be part of his plan for our purification. Because after all, we put ourselves underneath his will. So it's up to him now to give us whatever he wants to give. But we should vow, and I also, this is also part of my prayer, as I vow that whatever you give me, that I will only use that in your service, and I will never use it for sense gratification. Pray like that. There may be a distance or a gap between what we're praying and what we're actually experiencing, but at least the prayer should be like that. So, to some extent, we can transcend it, we can be prayerful, and we just do the best we can in a given situation. But that's really the beauty of this verse, because it says that if the devotee, even though he's experiencing the reactions of his past sinful activities, if he still sincerely, with his body, words, and mind, is trying to serve Krishna, that Krishna becomes pleased with that endeavor, and that he earns the rights, he becomes the rightful heir to Krishna's mercy. That Krishna will give him that mercy, and he will go back to Godhead. So we should train ourselves that no matter what our bodily situation is, that we should learn how to continue to do our service in spite of that. And yes, sometimes may be reduced. The quality or the quantity of our rounds may be reduced if we're in real severe difficulty. People have severe diseases like that. It may be very difficult. But still, if we just endeavor, if we just want to do that, Krishna will bless us. So we should do the best that we can. We should try to transcend. We should be prayerful. And we should continue to be sincere in our endeavor. And Krishna will bless us. It's like what comes to mind is Haridas Thakur. No, he was an Namacharya. He was chanting 300,000 names a day. Right? How many hours? 22, 23 hours a day he was chanting Hare Krishna. 3 times 64 rounds he was chanting. He was a Namacharya. When he was getting old and he was, you know, getting near to leaving his body, it was very hard for him to complete that number of rounds. So Mahaprabhu came to visit him. He said, Haridas, what is the news? And he said, the news is that I cannot complete my vow of chanting 300,000 names a day. And Mahaprabhu told him that, Haridas, you're already very old. You've already chanted for so many years, you can reduce the number of rounds you're chanting. Haridas was determined. He said, no, I must chant. So even he was lying on his back, and he was so frail, and he was so sick, he was so ill, still he was trying to chant those 300,000 names. So the point is that even according to our bodily condition, if we're not able to do that, still we should have it in our hearts to try to do it. As one devotee said, if we can't cry for Krishna, then we should cry that we can't cry for Krishna. And if we can't cry that we can't cry for Krishna, then we should cry that we can't cry that we can't cry for Krishna. And so on and so forth. It can go on and on like that. So we should cry. We should beg. We should borrow. We should steal. Not literally. Somehow, we should endeavor to get the mercy of Krishna. That's how sincere we should be. No matter the bodily condition, we do the best we can, and we should, in our hearts and our minds, even if we're completely incapacitated on the physical plane, still, even within our minds, we should serve Krishna. We can do manasa puja in the mind. We can worship the deity. We can chant. We can do everything within the mind. And it's said that there's no difference between worshiping Krishna within the mind or worshiping Him on the physical plane. It's like there in the Nectar of Devotion, there's an example that poor Brahman, that he did not have the means to worship Krishna, but he wanted to worship Krishna. And so he was advised by someone, well, then just do it in the mind. So he wanted to offer Krishna some nice sweet rice. And so in his mind, he was cooking the sweet rice down, 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 too thick, thicker, thicker, thicker. And it was getting just to the right consistency. And he thought, this is just right. But he was thinking, now, is it the right temperature to offer to Krishna? Because he didn't want to offer Krishna hot sweet rice. He wanted it to be the right temperature. So in his meditation, he reached and he touched into the pot just to see, you know, was it cool enough to offer to Krishna? But then quickly, he pulled his finger out and it was burnt. So on a physical plane, his meditation broke. He looked at his finger and actually was burnt. Even on his physical body, his finger was burnt. It just goes to prove that on the mental plane, we can do these things and we can worship Krishna and we can get the same benefit. So even in the worst case scenario, if we're completely incapacitated on the material level, and if we're just lying on the bed so ill, even within our minds, even if we can't move our lips, we can, within our minds, we can do puja. In the worst case scenario. So I'm going to end with that because it's very late. And I thank you all for listening. Attentive audience. A little bit of sleeping, but not too much. A few droopy eyes. A few nodding heads. But overall, you were able to listen to what I had to say. I'm sorry if it was boring at times. But I hope that I'll be able to return next week and also give another lecture, if Krishna's willing. But that's up to Krishna. I may have a headache next week. A migraine, I don't know. But even if I have a migraine, maybe I'll come. Then I'll just sit here and I won't speak, but just within my mind, I will offer this lecture to you. And through mental telepathy, you will all hear this lecture within your minds. And you will say, yes, yes. No, yes. Very good. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.